Hey, this is Derek Day from Classless Act, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to this intro before the intro of our Today's Boondoggle radio show. As you know, we're a veteran-owned and operated podcast, and this has been an incredibly therapeutic journey for me as a veteran that struggles with PTSD and anxiety, just getting out and talking to people. But it does cost us some money, so if you feel so obliged to donate to our GoFundMe, we have a GoFundMe under Today's Boondoggle. We also have a Venmo at Today's Boondoggle that you can donate to. Our anchor sponsorship at anchor.fm/Today's Boondoggle. Any questions, comments, suggestions, complaints, you can email us at todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. And please follow us on our social media sites at Today's Boondoggle on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all your social media platforms, as well as our YouTube channel, our Rumble channel, and our BitChute channel. Please follow, subscribe, comment, and download. And please consider checking out our sponsors. If you support our sponsor, Dream Nutrition, you can receive 10% off your order by using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. So Dream Nutrition, they're a veteran-owned and operated company as well, so please support them and receive 10% off using the promo code BOONDOG10. Thanks for your time, and thanks for listening.
Listen up! Hold on to your seats! Grab your girls, grab your beers!
What's going on? It's Tommy Beck, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
This is Mark Metcalf, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio.
You are listening to Today's Boondoggle with Bailey on Domain Cleveland Radio. Yes, Kato Kalen listens to this all the time.
I am Monty Heath, so one Heath, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Hey, what's up? It's John from Skillet, and you are listening to Today's Boondoggle on Domain Cleveland Radio.
What's going on, everybody? It's Bill Bailey with Today's Boondoggle. And real quick housekeeping note, if you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that follow, subscribe button, or on Rumble. Please hit that follow and subscribe button. And, if you're listening to us on whatever podcast platform you utilize, hit that follow and subscribe. Help us build up our numbers here so we can continue to bring you interviews like the one that I'm bringing you today. Today I have Mr. Pete Mills of the band The Sweet Kill. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad we were able to connect. I was checking out some of your work, and I want to talk get into your history a little bit. But before we get, you know, speaking of the history, I like to go back with whenever I have guests on for the first time. So originally, what did you want to be when you grew up?
It was an astronaut. Then it turned into a journalist, and then it turned into a cop. And then I was like, you know what? Rock and roll is the only thing I really am good at. So I must just do that.
Nice. And when was it that you like discovered rock and roll and started on that journey?
Interestingly, I was 6 years old. I was in Venezuela, where my mom grew up, and I was I just didn't speak Spanish, so I was confused, and like everyone's talking, and I didn't know anything was going on. And I saw a Kiss record, and they're standing on the burning cities, and I was just transfixed. And I do remember when I put on that Kiss record, it didn't sound as dark as the imagery, which is interesting to me. But I remember being like, but I do like it, and I almost like the visualization of it and the imagery of it was more what sold it to me than the actual music. And then the music just, you know, was a secondary feature.
Yeah, they were good at that. I remember mine was the Kiss Alive album, seeing that for the first time. And was just like, okay, I got to know more about what is this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, and then you had something that, that you could understand since you couldn't understand most of the people talking around you. So,
yeah.
Sure, that helped. And then, so, you know, you get into Kiss, you start discovering music. And when was it that you, you know, started playing an instrument?
It was when I was 14. And the confusing part about my life up until that point was that everything everyone wanted me to be, like a soccer player, like a sports guy, like do even like guitar lessons, anything that was thrown my way, I was just like, nope, 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 nope. I would have like a 2-week shelf life. But when I got my bass guitar, for some reason, I lost track of time. For some reason, I felt compelled to just do this and not worry about it and not feel the, I had no pressure. It was something that came to me rather than being forced to do something and be a part of teamwork activities as a kid growing up. My parents were always concerned because I was an only child that I just was going to be like this loner dude. And I was totally fine with it. But when I found music, it was like, oh, this makes sense. I don't need other people. Although 2 weeks later, I joined a band and then I realized how powerful the camaraderie and the exact the correlation of being on a team, right, was what a band was to me. So it was my first experience of having my own relationship with team activities was being in a band and playing music.
Nice. And then you know, how did that that band come together? And you know, what was that experience? Were you still in Venezuela at this time? Or
No. I'm from Canada, and I was only visiting Venezuela that time when I was there to, you know, my mom just wanted to show me where she grew up, essentially. But but coming back to Canada, well, living in Canada, I was like, my mom just was like, you're going to Catholic school. I'm like, I hated it. So I got expelled. And I got expelled like 2 months. In Canada, we have high school starting at grade 8. So elementary is K to grade 7. And just 2 months before graduating into the realm of high school, I got expelled, went to a public school, met all these really cool people, played Spin the Bottle, started making out with girls, like the things that I wasn't allowed to do as a kid in a private school. And those, and so in the summer of grade 8 going into grade 9, they got word of the wire that people in my public school system got word on the wire that I got a bass and they wanted me to be in their band. And that's 2 weeks after getting the bass, the next thing you know, I'm playing in a band with all these people that I only met for a couple months. So it was like a pivotal moment.
Yeah. It's awesome how like music can just like, you know, open so many doors and bring people together without, you know, whatever your background and biases are and stuff like that. Music's a uniter. Like that.
Absolutely.
And then how far did that band end up going? Just
we were so bad, and then all of a sudden we did a little personnel change, because the correlation between me being in a band and the teamwork element is I joined football. So I was a football player and I was all about football. So I would take all the coaches pep rally talks and discussions and modalities and apply them to being in a band. So I was essentially the manager of that band. And then I decided, like, since we had, like, we were so bad, and I thought it was because of the drummer. So we got the drummer to change to bass. I went from bass to guitar, got rid of the other guitar player, and got a really good drummer. And next thing you know, we had a bidding war going on. And due to certain personal difficulties with the members of the band, and many rehabs later, the band sort of was on the verge of imploding. And then we got this huge record deal and we went on tour and did stadiums and all that. And it was like a really wonderful experience, but we were so dysfunctional that we broke up like shortly after that. So we went from rags to riches and then from riches to rags in a very short period of time. So in Canada, we were all over much music and we were very infamous, not famous. I had to explain that to my cousin's daughters. They're like, so are you famous? I'm like, no, I'm kind of more infamous than famous, because the buffoonery that we got up to on those tours and the stuff that we did was just like stupid, and it made the news. It made the front page kind of thing. And then after that band, I started the Sweet Kill.
Oh, nice. So then, so was that Flash Bastard then?
Yep.
Okay. And that started in high school then.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Cause usually, you know, I know a lot of people I have on, they go through, you know, the phases in high school and, you know, the horrible band names and stuff like that, but you guys ended up, sticking it out and making something with it. You want to share a little bit more about some of the infamy behind that?
I mean, long story short, I mean, I pretty much parlayed all of my football coach's disciplinary perspectives, and I applied them to my band. So I put that band on my back and went up the mountain. And we got a record deal with Nikki Six from Motley Crue. We got a record deal on his label. So we were label mates with, at the time, Blondie, Violent Femmes. It was kind of cool. It was like a really eclectic label that were taking all these bands from like the 70s and still in the 80s and making them relevant at that time. And so we were on that label. We went on tour with Motley Crue and the Scorpions. We had so many altercations with the Scorpions to a point where there was a fight backstage. And because Nikki Sixx signed us, all of the Motley Crue road crew were advocating for us in a way. And then the Scorpions, all their German dudes, were like hating on us. And there was about to be this like rumble from the jungle backstage. And Nikki Sixx sort of like parted the seas and then just went straight into our dressing room and pretty much said that we're kicked off the tour. And as a result of that, when we arrived back to Vancouver, where we're from, we were like just new front page news. It was just like, how does that happen? How does a band get kicked off of a Motley Crue tour? So we were,
yeah, and how
we
do were you out crew the crew?
Exactly. Like they didn't get kicked off any tours. They didn't get kicked off of Ozzy. They didn't have that experience, but we did. So yeah, that's a really good point. How do you out-crew the crew? And then, yeah, so that was it. That was the vibe.
So was it, do you think it was still because, you know, I mean, coming right out of high school and building this thing, a lot of, immaturity or something that would participate,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, contributed sure to that? Yeah, a lot of king baby type syndrome. Big ego, big ego. You know, I always think that an attitude of gratitude will prevail. And I didn't have it. And I don't think the singer didn't have it. So we were just at the mercy of our own egos and we paid the price of it. But at the same time, if we came home victorious after that tour without any scuffle, probably wouldn't have been as, like, I didn't know there's a thing called publicity. I didn't know there's a thing called a PR person because my phone was ringing off the hook nonstop. There was no energy on my behalf that I didn't look for it. It came to me. So, you know what I mean? If everything went as planned, it would have been just like, oh yeah, they went on tour, they came back, yay. But we weren't capable of reining it in. It just wasn't going to happen. So
nice. And then, so what was the contributing factor that really set off the Germans?
Chasing the singer of the Scorpions down the backstage hall with a pitchfork from the gardening crew at the Portland Saddle, Portland Rose Garden. That was the pivotal moment because I didn't know Matthias, the guitar player of the Scorpions, knew karate. So next thing you know, I'm seeing him do all these like epic roundhouse in the air circular kicks, trying to like, you know, buff his feathers to make us feel like we're gonna get our asses kicked, and all the German road crew were all just ready to go, and then all the Motley Crue people had to deal with us. And so we created a lot of unnecessary situations that made the news.
Nice. And then so I'm before like signing with you know, Nikki Sixx's label and kind of connecting with him, what was like the music scene like from where you guys were at?
I mean, we were never listening to anything modern at the time. We were very, very strict about our musical diet. We were very about the 70s. So for me growing up, my heroes like Kiss, David Bowie, the New York Dolls, you know, like Television, the New York scene essentially, and the England scene of the 70s, like so Sex Pistols, Buzzcocks, The Damned. These are the bands that we swore by. So at the music that we were just never part of the music scene. And that's what I think made us stand out. We weren't playing the game, so to speak, of chasing what was popular. I mean, David Bowie has this amazing quote that you got to be 7 minutes ahead of the curve. Well, we were just like, well, let's be 70 hours behind the curve and see what happens. That was our mentality.
Nice. And then, I don't know if I caught, like, you know, how did you guys get on Nikki Sixx's radar then? What was it that, how did that meeting come?
Word of mouth, just word of mouth. So many people were just, because a lot of people, okay, so in Vancouver, you either become an outdoors guy, which is not me. You become a heroin addict, which is definitely not me. And, or you become a studio rat, right? Because it's raining 80% of the year. It's just torrential downpour. So a lot of recording studios got a lot of work because all the big bands like Metallica, like Aerosmith, like, I mean, Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, all these bands would come to Vancouver to get away from the New York lifestyle or the LA lifestyle and be in a little bit of a smaller town and have the focus of the recording be the priority. And so all these studios, like, and big names like Bruce Fairburn and Bob Rock and Dave Ogilvy and Garth Richardson, who did the Rage Against the Machine album. Dave Ogilvy, you know, pretty much did Skinny Puppy, Nine Inch Nails, and Marilyn Manson. These are the, you know, the prestige of Vancouver had this thing. So if you, you know, being that it's a small town, all these people were aware of my band. And as a result of my relationship with them, they were just like, when they would work with certain artists, they would start to say, hey, have you heard of this band? Hey, have you heard of, you know, and so that's how it just word through the wires kind of thing.
Oh, nice. And then curiosity, like, you know, what's the meaning or what, inspired the name Flash Bastard?
Yeah. And it's just rebellion. There's nothing much to it.
No. Okay. And then, so you did, now did you go straight from when this project ended into the Sweet Kill then?
Well, kind of. I mean, I started writing with this woman who's a hairdresser, and I just had this feeling that she was a singer because she had this really raspy voice. And so I felt for the first time free out of the confines of this very strict musical diet to do what I want to do. And I started writing music, and it was very post-punk and very new wave and very dark wave, which I didn't know that phrase at the time, but it's very popular now. It's the codification of that sort of 80s sound of that cold synths. There's cold wave as well, these genres. But I didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to do something. And then she really liked it. And we got a record deal in 1 month of me playing all the instruments. And it was really kind of a Fast and Furious type thing. It's very similar. I'm used to the Fast and Furious. So she died. It was unfortunate. It was sad. It really affected me. And it inspired me for the first time to be like, man, lead singers are unreliable, man. Like, it's just, it's always like, there's always drama. There's always this uncertainty, and that's life essentially. But I wanted to have like a self-contained project. So after that ended, I just continued doing what I was doing, but I decided I'm going to be the person singing. And it was a very cathartic experience. And then I realized playing so many shows and playing all around. At this point now, I moved to Los Angeles from Canada. And at this point, I started to realize how turbulent it can be to be a singer, how it can be kind of, I understood where the turbulence came from when I decided to put on that hat. So that's how the Sweet Kill evolved. Is it came out of the strict musical diet from a glam punk band called Flash Bastard. And then it kind of, I had my freedom in Dirty Blonde with this singer. And then I started the Sweet Kill kind of carrying on where I left off with that singer as a singer. And that's how the Sweet Kill, and that's sort of the message of the Sweet Kill, is that there is a battle between every man, woman, and child on this earth, between the sweetness of life and the darkness of life. So the Sweet Kill is like a sort of duality message. And I tried to like write within that realm thematically.
Okay. And like you mentioned, you know, putting on the vocalist hat, but I mean, you've, for this project, you wear all the hats. And this is all like, you play every instrument. And now it started with bass. When did it start expanding into other instruments for you?
Well, in the Flash Bastard days, I went from bass to guitar. So that's when I realized, like, I actually prefer playing guitar more. But then in the Dirty Blonde era, I started to see that my bass lines took on like a real melodic type thing that I would essentially unconsciously make a sort of tribute to Joy Division and The Cure. Unconsciously, it was just one of those things where I felt the need to go really up high on the bass. And then in that process, I lived in a studio loft in Vancouver above a rundown Chinese restaurant, 3,000 square foot loft. So we had our rehearsal space there. Drums were set up, bass amps, and all the amps were set up. So that's when I started to play the drums, and that's when I started to record the drums, and that's when I started to get into the drums. And you know, like, I mean, there's better drummers than me, but I do understand the nuances and the finesse of what it takes to be able to be like a punctuated performer as a drummer. So that's how that evolved, is just being in the proximity of these instruments always there. I wake up, I open my door, and there's the drum kit. So it's like, yeah, I'm going to play that, you know?
Nice. And then, you know, as, what was the transition like for you then adding the vocalist hat on?
That was a learning curve, because what I learned as a vocalist is that it's not about just hitting the notes, and that's what I thought it was about. It's about hitting the emotion, and that's what I've just sort of come into my confidence with, as far as in order for me to hit the emotion, I need to be beyond passionate about what it is that I'm writing about lyrically and thematically. So I would, in the beginning of the stages of the Sweet Kill, it started out being more like an idea where I was going to do it all. And that had an energy and pressure that I sort of felt. And it didn't necessarily have anything to do with like a theme, like a beginning, middle, and an end is really important for a movie. And songs to me are like little movies. So I would have the music together, and then I'd try to find what the melody or what the energy of the song would be. And then just recently it was the other way around now. So this record deal I have with Young and Cold Records is a celebration of me starting to see that like the beginning, middle, and end of every one of these little movies called songs is super important, and how they can actually fit under an overall umbrella arch of what is the culmination of this message. So the Sweet Kill album Darkness is literally a reflection of every sort of nuance of like battling between light and dark, battling between good and evil, battling between the sweetness of life and the need to kill it all, you know, like destroy it, tear it all down, to rebuild it. So that was my awareness. And a big part of that was just sort of going like, if I'm going to sing, and I want to use my voice as an instrument, how do I want it to sound? And I would go like, man, I actually have a low voice. I didn't really realize that, but I can hit high notes. And the reason why those high notes sound so good with someone who's got a baritone is because they're grounded in this rooted thing. Whereas a tenor who has like a higher range can hit high notes easily and effortlessly. They don't sound as good as somebody who's actually a natural baritone. And these statistics and this sort of analytic, I didn't understand until my girlfriend pointed it out to me. And I was like, oh, so I could actually go down low with some authority and with some conviction But when I need to go up high, I can do that too. So it was an interesting awareness that brought about the delivery of this album.
And then, I mean, like you said, you played all the instruments on it and everything, but you've also now, you know, also done the, like, kind of like the engineering and recording as well. What was that? Shadow Zone Sound is your...
Exactly.
You want to talk about how that, that you know, that transition and putting on those hats as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to be clear, on this album, the drumming is done by somebody else. His name's Sean. You know, he's a better drummer than me. And of course, I would want the best to be, you know, part of it. And there is that sort of extra energy that somebody else can bring into the thing. However, I like it to be fully self-contained in the realm of a Nine Inch Nails type model, where Trent Reznor is the creative catalyst for his vision. And like the days of having a jam to see what happens are just so, like, it almost brings about anxiety for me. Like, the last thing I want to do is, like, go for a 10-hour endless jam of, like, what happened. Like, I want specific focus. I want to be able to work on something for a period of time, maybe 5-10 minutes tops of a jam type setting, and then make sense of it and then turn it into something. Or else, to me, it's just like, I'm not jamming to get my chops up. I want product. I want results. And so a big part of the results started when I got that record deal with Motley Crue. We got some money. And so it was about buying select pieces of gear over the years. And I just, over the years, kept buying more gear. I'm not the best investor, because when I see how I can improve the sound of what it is that I'm doing, I more than likely will buy that $7,000 mic or that $4,000 compressor or whatever. And that, over the years, have just been my experience of knowing how to record and watching the greats like Jamie Kosh and Dave Ogilvie and Garth Richardson, and see how simple it is. You put the mic on the amp, take the mic, put an EQ on it, put it into a compressor, send it to tape, and there we go. Like, the simplicity of that was like, okay, cool. So that's why in the environment that I grew up in with my 3,000 square foot loft in Vancouver, I just made sure that all the microphones were on all the amps ready to go at all times. The drum kit was always mic'd just in case I would have that burst of inspiration. So there's like a sort of a left brain, right brain thing going on, where I'm super... There was a learning curve with the left brain where I was trying to figure out all the technical elements, but I found out a way to do it that works for my creativity to be able to be instantly accessed at any time. And I'm super grateful for that left brain, right brain polarity. And as a result of moving to America, a lot of the labels got wind of my ability to, because I had a co-production on a song that every time Kobe Bryant would dunk, the song would come on. This song got placed on all the TV shows. Saturday Night Live did a whole skit based off of this song. Sororities still to this day use this song as initiation. It's a song called More Bounce in California by the artist Soul Kid One. And because of that, and the prestige of that, and the popularity of it at the time, it was in every TV show. Like Laguna Beach, like OC, you name it, whatever popular TV show was happening at that time, late 2000s, it was in it. So all these labels were like, I was doing work for all these labels, like Capitol Records, Geffen, Cleopatra, and in Universal. And it was just sort of learning, like I did 130 Korean pop songs in 1 year, which is a song start to finish every day. Every 2 days, start to finish. So I, you know, my mixing skills got really good. My production skills got really refined. And then I had to learn how to master. If I was going to deliver these songs, I had to put that final touch on it, which is what mastering is. And I just sort of like flew by the seat of my pants. I remember at certain points, my girlfriend was like feeding me while I was working at the, you know, like, there's just no time to make dinner and no time to literally eat. I was just at the computer all day. And it's like, she would feed me and I'd be eating. It was kind of cool.
Nice. Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, I guess that's one way to learn, I guess, to do it, you know, over and over and over for hours, you know, it's like, I've been, and I like what you said about the left brain, right brain thing. Cause sometimes it's just like, you know, I have all these ideas of things I want to get done, but then the learning part is always, I get stuck up on that, you know, and can sometimes, like, you know, it cause myself anxiety where it's just like, I'm not going to do it or whatever, but it's the only way to get the stuff done, man. You know, just get in there and do it and screw up, screw up. And then, you know, eventually you don't screw up as much.
It's interesting. Sometimes creatively speaking, the mistakes are actually the best things. Sometimes technically speaking, the mistakes are the worst things, but it's a balance. It's hard to, you never know. They sometimes line up and offset each other. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's just getting over that fear of stepping out there and doing it, you know, it's all right to fail. Just learn from it. You either win or you learn.
You know, there's a saying in The Artist's Way, this book by Julia Cameron, who helps people unblock from, you know, their inner anxieties or their inner fears or their self-talking censor that says you're not good enough, so why bother trying? There's a saying that just be prepared to suck and just see what happens. Just be prepared to suck. And that takes the pressure off, because I was like, oh, I need to write the number one Billboard song. It's like, well, then I never do, because I'm not ready to write that song, because I got to wait for more inspiration. And that is just a juggernaut of despair, because it never ends up producing anything. So if I just do it for the sake of it, and there's this saying that, like, you take care of the quantity and the universe will take care of the quality. So if I just keep doing, something's about to hit.
Oh yeah, I agree. And who is that quote from? Be prepared to suck.
Julia Cameron. Okay. By the book The Artist's Way. And this book was such a pivotal thing, where ex-cops who have lived the life of discipline and, like, executing the law, when they retired, ended up becoming world-selling authors, best-selling authors of just storytelling. And, you know, like it's helped so many people. And I've done it, like, so many times, just because I enjoy it. I like the process of learning and uncovering more about, like, what's possible within my lifespan and what I can do and better improve. And everything I do is just to become better at what I was doing yesterday. That's all.
Hey, baby, this is Double D, also known as Dream Daddy. And I gotta tell y'all something about our new sponsorship here at today's Boondoggle. And the name is Dream Nutrition. So if you're looking to empower your human vitality, well, then you've come to the right place. With over 12 years of combined experience in cannabinoids and terpene products, Dream Nutrition products include CBD oils, patches, proteins, and so much more. The endocannabinoid system is believed to have involvement in regulating physiological and cognitive processes, including the immune system, appetite, pain sensation, mood, memory, and in mediating the pharmacological effects of cannabis. Support this veteran-owned and operated company today, and today's Boondoggle fans will receive 10% off their orders when using the promo code BOONDOG10 at checkout. That's BOONDOG10 at checkout. So go to the link. That's dreamnutrition.com/discount/boondog10. And remember, dream is not spelled like Dream Daddy. It's spelled DREEM. And start saving today, because you deserve to feel your best. And you know that's right. So tell them Dream Daddy and your brand from today's Boondog sent you.
Oh yeah. I like that. I'm going to look that up, because I can kind of relate. I'm retired military, and you get that, you know, just that one way of thinking, you know, for so long. And, you know, failure is not an option, you know, cause it could cost somebody's life. So even on the simple things, I'm like, I still get all, like, freaked out and talk myself out of things, you know?
Yeah.
Sounds like something I got to add to my library to look into. So I appreciate that.
Right on.
So you mentioned then, you know, after, you know, obviously you did, you know, a lot of all these other projects, started getting comfortable with it. when was it that your LP Darkness came together then?
It was the beginning of me going, I want to do the Sweet Kill again, because there was that time where I did it as a result of my singer passing away. And then it didn't go. I wasn't ready. So what I ended up doing is then I'd started working with all those labels for all those years. And then I just started realizing, like, man, I'm doing so much work for other people. Like, I worked with Sheryl Crow, worked with Mike Garson from David Bowie. I worked with Bobby Brown. I worked with Carmine Appice. I worked with all these amazing people. And I was just like, man, they have so many great things to say, and they have so many vehicles to say it. Where am I with that? So Darkness was me celebrating coming back into the fray of being an artist, but then knowing, like, being exposed to so many talented individuals, that working with them intimately and seeing that their work ethic and their passions and their and what drove them, it was something that inspired me to kind of go, oh, so once you know what you want to say, you can just say it. Wow, I'm all about that. So Darkness started with four songs. It started with the song Closer, Darkness, Heart Attack, and Cold. Those were the four songs I had. And two of them are co-writes, and the other two are just all me. And I just sort of realized that I think that I found something. So I sent that out on a private SoundCloud link to, like, all these labels. So many people were, like, you know, really adulating it. Oh, this is great, but we're not really looking for this right now. We're not looking to sign any new acts right now, or we're not looking for this genre, but keep doing what you're doing. All this nice, positive feedback. But this one label in Germany was like, we want to put it out. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, I'm going to get a little EP going and just put it out. And I realized that they said that, or you could do an album. And then I'm like, yes, I can do this. I had the vision already solidified. All I had to do is just fill in the blanks with the other six songs. And so the initial start of this creative endeavor was 2021. And then at the end of 2021 is when I started to finish the six songs. So it's September 2021, I had four. And then quite quickly, because of the enthusiasm from Young and Cold Records in Germany, I was able to just, like, put on the blinders and just focus on finishing the next six songs. And then we released it February 2022. So that was the evolution of that. And it was quite effortless in some areas. And in some areas it was like, okay, this is, you know, I got to refocus. Maybe I took it in a little bit of a slightly different direction. I got to remix it and add a little bit of more reverb on the snare. Like, a lot of sort of analytics would me and my girlfriend were really, she's credited with additional production because she was a very integral sounding voice, a sounding board for me to go, like, yeah, that's not really in the genre if you mix it that way, and here's how you might want to. So she, you know, just like more reverb, you know. And so, like, a lot of, I was willing, I'm not taking any criticism personally. I'm all about, like, what can I do to be better? How can we make these songs as best as they can be? Because essentially they're not my songs, they're our songs, right? I'm just the channel for them.
Yeah, gotcha. And then I mean, you talked about, you know, I mean, all the hats that you've worn and how much of yourself is in, you know, producing this album. So how much say-so or control do you have over your filming or your music videos as well?
I have the initial, that's a really good question. And thanks for acknowledging those, because those were labors of love. Absolutely. I would have the original vision. And then the director would then make it come alive. So Satellite is about battling my demons, which I'm sure we all have them, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm in the right room. Okay, cool. you know, and so he was like, well, you need an alien type woman. And at the time I had I was doing an Airbnb where I had a guest from Vienna who was like staying with me, and she was she fit the bill exactly. Her name's Pandora, and you know, I was like, hey, does this woman I'm living with right now, do you think she'd be good? He's like, yes. So we used her in as the demonstration or the symbol of the demon, and I'm chasing the demon, and was it a dream, was it not a dream? And then the same director did the video where I was like, I really want to have women in PVC head to toe anonymously, but like creepy with like white lenses, and juxtaposing with a panther, which is a symbol of dread, and they're not necessarily a symbol of light, but like, and I'm caught between both worlds of like this dread and this demonic type haunting sort of voodooistic type dancing, and I'm stuck in a straitjacket. And so all I had was the panther and the women, and he was like, well, you need to be in a straitjacket. So, you know, I'm pretty in that realm when it comes to videography. Like I do err on the side of the producer or the director's visions, but I do have a lot of the emphasis or the initial thrust of like the vision, and then they'll like crystallize it.
Yeah, because you weren't like, okay, so we're going to have a live panther and you're going to, you know, tie my arms and just my head's going to be exposed. This could go wrong.
It did go wrong but it's funny. It didn't go wrong in the sense that, like, yes, we had three handlers of the panther at any times, like they could have intervened and it would have been a safe. Oh yeah. And they did say this, that they gave us education before they let the panther out on set. They said, everybody has to stick together. And if the panther for some reason gets off of the safety leash, do not run. So it was like, so if we were in a cluster, that was the idea. So everyone, like the makeup artists, the filmographers, the videographers, everyone was literally in this like cluster that no one would like break out of while the panther was on set. But I actually improvised. The director was like, hey, I want you to fall out of the chair when you're fake seizuring. So I fake seizured, and then I thought I'd just kind of roll out of the chair, but I hit my head and got a concussion, and all of that blood in the video is actually real. So that was the mishap, but it wasn't like, I mean, a part of me wants to say, yeah, the panther did a swipe at me, man, but I'm still here. But no, truth be told, it's just a concussion, and that's the way that happened.
Nice. And then you got the album's coming out, or is out already?
It's out already, yes.
And what was the name of the label again?
It's Young and Cold Records, and there's vinyl available and there's CDs available, and you can also buy the digital on our Bandcamp, the Sweet Kills Bandcamp, or you can just order yourself a vinyl. I'm so stoked. It's on vinyl, man. Like, it's just big. Yeah.
That's great. And then, like, any plans, or I mean, of like taking it on the road or anything?
Absolutely. This year has been sort of been focusing on actually writing and recording the new album, which is entitled Nowhere. And so we have our record release party coming up in November, but generally what we're looking forward to is playing the festival circuit in Europe in 2023, the WGT festival, which is the huge goth, annual goth sort of dark wave post-punk type celebration, where they have like, you know, some of the venues are in like castles and stuff and churches. And I'm just like,
oh, nice.
Bring it on, dude. I'm ready for that. So that's the focus right now. 2022 was the release of it. And then, you know, I was landlocked for a minute, and post COVID and post pandemic, like sort of, I just took the opportunity to get really fluid with my creative juices. So that was how I looked at 2022, even though we're still almost, or we're two thirds of the way through it. That's still how I look at it. We do have our show coming up at Bar Sinister Saturday, November 26th. There'll be all the merchandise will be available, t-shirts, stickers, you name it. Maybe even some perfume. There's some talk about bringing in some perfume. So, yeah. Oh,
nice. And then, being somebody that's so hands-on with this project, and this is like, you know, your soul, basically, you know, everything about you, you've contributed to what, how is it to try and like recruit members to play these live?
It's tricky. I have a crew of people that I really love playing with. There's a guy named Kane Daniel on drums. There's a guy named Ricky Bonazza on bass. And there's Khadija Kastenbrock on guitar. And, you know, I think that my girlfriend's going to be starting to play keyboards. Ellen Hawk, she'll be on the keyboards. And then I'm singing and playing guitar. But it's, you know, these are really, 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 really good musicians. And they, and being in the city of Los Angeles, you know, in order for them to be as good as they are, they're in demand. So they're generally on tour with other artists. Right now, Ricky's on tour with the Butcher Babies. Kane is on tour with some, I can't remember their name, but he's always on tour. So it's tricky, you know, but we'll see who's available come November 26th. It is, you know, 2 months away now. Is it 2 months away? Yeah. Three months away.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, so we'll see who's available
next weekend.
Yeah, so I'm just, you know, I'm confident that, you know, being that the City of Angels or whatever, Los Angeles has really great musicians. I'm not worried. You know, there's no shortage of great drummers, great bass players, great guitar players. So we'll see who's available. But generally, it's like a self-contained unit for a reason. It's not like, you know, it's more people, more problems sometimes, you know, with creative energies. I've been there and done that, man, and I'm grateful for those that have that collaboration, and I can definitely do that, but I like to do that for situations where it's for other bands. I like to be that person, but for my musical expression, I'm very self-contained, and I have like a very inner sanctum of people that I would go to for guidance about, like, hey, what do you think of this, you know? But I'm not really looking to have like the collaborative experience. I like co-writing. That's fun. But yeah, I'm pretty happy with the way the framework is.
How much co-writing have you done, and like who with?
A lot of co-writing with a lot of singer-songwriters. Some of them are at the time they were up and coming, and now they're pretty prominent. A woman named Mandy Moore, Jasmine Kara is a Swedish pop star. Written with some great Koreans, Min-hee Kim. Who else? This, you know, being that I'm Canadian and I live in America, my PRO, which is the Performance Rights Organization, is SOCAN. So whenever people notably come through Canada or come from Canada to visit LA, my PRO puts me in contact with them. So I worked with, you know, a guy, Kevin Mental, and he works with a lot of bands up in Canada. He works with Kat Von D a lot. Who else? Bryn McCutcheon is the woman I wrote co-wrote Cold with. Donald Finn is who I wrote co-wrote Closer with. Rome DeLuce. I mean, I can just go on and on and on. Yeah. And I really enjoy it. Don't get me wrong. You know, and some of these songs may actually end up being Sweet Kill songs. It's part of like the flow state of the product that I'm. So Nowhere has got a very specific theme. So if something that I've written with somebody maybe 2 years ago that hasn't been released fits within that theme, then that's definitely in consideration for the track listing of Nowhere, which is the new album. But that's kind of how I work, is I go within the theme now. I write to support the theme. And if something needs to be written for that theme and I haven't written it yet, then I absolutely bang that out. But if there's something that fits the theme also that's from another era or another co-write from another session that never got released, by all means, you know, that's a qualification that qualifies.
Yeah, I learned a lot about in everything that you're doing and saying. I've learned a lot about PROs and stuff too through my friend John Sustar. He does you know, very similar stuff. He's got music out there with Motionless and White, and you know, he's everything you're saying. You guys sound a lot alike. You know, maybe I should try and get you guys connected or something.
But, yeah, absolutely.
But he's like, I'm done with bands. I'm done with bands. You know, I'm creating my own stuff, and it's like if they don't use it, I'm gonna put it out. You know, so
exactly. Yep.
So you mentioned too, trying, you know, with the learning, with everything, just try and be better than you were yesterday, basically. What is some things that you feel like you could still improve on?
You mean as an artist or in general or as a producer or all of it?
As an artist.
I could improve on being more disciplined with writing for the sake of writing. I write very strategically. Like I said, if there's a theme, then I support it and I find ways to support it and I'm motivated to support it. But I do respect singer-songwriters that are always writing a song for every emotion they feel. And I don't necessarily do that. So I would like to be more in that flow state for the sake of keeping those writing chops up. For example, when Andy Warhol would talk to Lou Reed back in the days of The Factory in the late 60s in New York, he would ask Lou, how many songs have you written today? And Lou Reed would say two or four or whatever his number was. No matter what that number was, Andy Warhol said you could do more. So I feel that sometimes I glorify the process of songwriting is such a sacred thing, and it is. However, sometimes that glorification of the sacredness of that, I don't write as much as I could. And I also heard that Nick Cave has an office that's 10 feet by 10 feet with an upright piano in it and a typewriter, and he goes to that office 9 to 5 Monday to Friday. And the guy is very prolific. He has so many songs out there and he's got so many side projects and he's just always writing. And so that's what I want to improve on as an artist, is to be able to have less of a strategy, but more of like a fluidity.
Gotcha. And man, so you just reminded me of something too, like with, you know, all the songs that you've been a part of and put out. And well, let me just ask you some of the questions that I normally ask guests that, I have on here. Is there a song that you feel has inspired you in life? That's, something, you know, that's a go-to, even, you know, that you don't get tired of, it's on your playlist, like whenever you need that extra motivation or inspiration.
It's interesting, 'cause I'll probably have a song for every sort of genre. There's a Cat Power song called Metal Heart. There is Fascination Street by The Cure. There is Atmosphere by Joy Division. There's You Get What You Give by the New Radicals. There's so many different songs that, for different genres, that I listen to kind of, I've listened to on repeat with authority, with complete conviction. I'm listening to this for 8 hours. I don't give a shit. And so those songs are just very off the top of my head, like near and dear to my heart, that I could always listen to on repeat for sure.
Nice. And what class do you feel should be mandatory before graduating high school today?
Ooh. That is a great, great question. I don't even know who could be qualified to teach this class, but I would say spiritual growth.
Yeah, I like that. That's no, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know who would be that guy to teach that, you know, but I think that there's such a sort of cut and dry element of like statistics and SATs and GPAs and, you know, where are you going to go and who's going to set you in. And a lot of sort of like, I didn't go to college, man. Like I was just, I knew in grade 10 that I was going to do the bare minimum to graduate just so I could be in a van playing music. Like, that was my goal, and I achieved that goal. But it's like, along the ways, there were so many like life things that occurred that were like, how do you deal with the death of someone that shouldn't have died at age 21? How do you deal with drug addiction? Not this cloaking it as mental health and that we all suffer and it's okay to not be okay. You know, like, where is the solution to problems that occur that are not taught? You know, why is it about left and black and right, salt and pepper? Let's talk about the gray. Why can't there be a cohabitation with people that have different opinions rather than, you know, and social media, man, and the accessing of that, this device and the addiction to that, is phenomenal. It's stuff that I didn't grow up with, and it's so prevalent right now. So many people are using certain phrases like gaslighting and triggering and you know, not safe. And man, I'm from Canada, man. Like, I'd get punched in the face if I looked like someone the wrong way, but at the same time, we're hugging after it.
Yeah, you know?
Like, that was dangerous. My attitude that I exhibited in the barroom brawls that I would get into, or public, you know, displays of anger and whatnot. And then next thing you know, it's all good, but it needed to, you know, so how do I help find a way to have that release in the world, but also have some rudder, some foundational framework that I can base on principle of like universal truths that are applicable to anyone. And I can have access to those, and how, and so that to me is what I consider spirituality, not shaving my head and banging a tambourine. Although if that's what you choose to do, by all means do it. But that sort of reality and tangible practicality to living in the realm of, if I read books, I get smart. If I weightlift, I get strong, but how do I flex my soul? What do I need to do?
I love that. Yeah. I'm a person in recovery myself, and, you know, I work a recovery program, and, you know, I can look at like the 12 steps and, the stuff that, you know, I've been sober 13 years, but I'm still growing. I'm still learning every day.
Congrats.
And I feel like the principles behind that would benefit anybody, even if you don't have like an addiction, or we all, like you mentioned earlier, we all got some demons that are, you know, that we battle. But I mean, even if you don't have like a quote unquote addiction, to like alcohol or drugs, these steps, these principles would benefit so many people. So maybe that could be part of the class, you know, to bring you to a spirituality, to realize that, hey, I am, you know, there's a God. I don't know who it is. It ain't me, though, you know?
Wonderfully put, because I think that's where the realm of the 12-step group Al-Anon is so powerful, because those are for the friends and family members of those that are alcoholics and addicts. So you don't have to be addicted to anything, you know, and a lot of them aren't. However, mm-hmm. They've been affected by, so like I look at addiction as like it affects one person, like the cockroach. You see one cockroach, there's actually 300 in the wall somewhere. And that's what I look at as addiction, is that it's one person has affected like 300 people. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we're talking family members, public people, you know, police, society, everyone has, you know, that's how powerful addiction is. And it's unfortunate that the drummer of the Foo Fighters, you know, died, but it wasn't like addiction is mental health, right? But it's so weird now that nowadays that addiction and alcoholism is like, oh yeah. No, it's mental health, man. And then that becomes its own energy, and everyone's looking for everything else other than the actual solution to what that mental health syndrome has as a solution. It's like, oh, well, it's okay to be not okay. Okay, so what is that doing? What has changed now that you've admitted? See, the afflicted think that by admitting that they have a problem solves it, but that just
No, that's like, just the beginning. That's why that's the first step, you know?
Yeah.
There's more along the way, you know? You got to start, get your hands dirty and dig into the roots, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's not always comfortable, but yeah, I'm still making amends all these years later, and I'm still discovering things. They say more will be revealed, and, you know, I'm still learning about myself. It's thinking that, you know, just admitting it you know, that doesn't solve it all. That's just the beginning. It means I'm ready to do some work, or you should be, you know?
Absolutely. Yep.
But who are three people who've inspired you or you can credit for making you the person you are today?
The person I am today, I would attribute to my spiritual advisor, who's an exit Vietnam vet, and his name's Rick Peterson. I would say my dad, who is an ex-World War II veteran, and I would say my mom. So those are the three people that I would give credit to guiding me. You know, they're all thanked in the liner notes of the Darkness album. And if I could add one more, I would say another spiritual advisor by the name of Bill Sledetall, who passed away in 2020. Yeah. During COVID. And I would say those four people are integral to who I am at this point in my life.
Nice. And then are there any causes or organizations that you support and encourage others to check out?
Definitely Music Cares, because I've had the privilege of helping certain people that have had relationships with the music industry. And the way that that's set up is that it gives you free room and board in a rehab facility for you to recreate your life. If you've burned it down to the ground, there is a way up and out. No matter how far down the scale you've gone, you will see that your experience will benefit others. And that organization, I believe, is I've taken people through it. I've got calls at 2 a.m. where a guy at 5 a.m. in Boston was going to kill himself. And I've had the privilege of facilitating him on a flight the next day and calling Shireen from Music Cares to get him a bed in Pasadena. And we did. And then he stayed there for 2 months. And I was there witnessing his growth. And I was there supporting him throughout his journey. And it was really cool that there's organizations like that would be able to, like, you know, sponsorship, or what's the word? It's not sponsorship. Scholarship people into a facility like that. That's what word I was looking for.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned Shireen. I just started listening to Matt Pinfield's podcast about success and sobriety. And he interviewed Shireen, and she talked about you know, her involvement with Music Cares and everything. And I've been blessed with becoming friends with many, you know, people that have, you know, even benefited from that program as well. So yeah, I definitely stand. Yeah, you know, even though I'm not a musician, I'm a fan of music, and, you know, keep some of these inspirations around for me to benefit from their work, you know.
Well, I mean, we're cut from the same cloth, so yeah.
Yeah. And then favorite toy as a child?
Oh, dude, Transformers. Like, are you kidding me? How do you not love that? Like, that's a plane, and next thing you know, it's a robot. Or it's a truck, and next thing you know, it's a robot. Or it's a robot, and next thing you know, it's a tiger.
Nice. Maybe even a panther. And then, I mean, you mentioned, you know, your spiritual advisor serving, your father. My father was also a World War II Marine. But any message that you have for our military members currently serving overseas?
Thank you for your service. Absolutely. I'm a product of that mentality, you know, it's interesting because Rick would also say, like, if I was in the trenches, I would want you next to me, you know. And he's a guy that was a Vietnam vet. He was a Special Forces Vietnam operative from Copenhagen. So he flew the helicopters and did his thing, and he's got the scars to show for it, you know. And there's that sort of mentality that I have that is very, like, discipline, because discipline equals freedom. So I just have a tremendous amount of respect for that mindset of the military. The military mindset is what I grew up in. It's what I gravitate towards. It's what makes sense to me. I like truth, not your truth, not my truth, not their truth. The truth is what I seek.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's like, I hear that from Jocko, discipline equals freedom. No. Well, that's about all the questions I got for you, Pete. I really appreciate you taking the time, and I'm glad, you know, kind of where this, you know, what I got to learn about you and how much we share in common. So if there's any fans out there that are kind of new to hearing about you and want to know more or follow your work and stuff, where would you send them?
I would go to anything online that's The Sweet Kill. The key word is the. It's not Sweet Kill. Sweet Kill is a 70s slasher flick about a guy who seduces women and then he kills them. I've never seen it, actually. I almost saw it at Quentin Tarantino's theater, and then I had to work last minute. I do a lot of suicide prevention, so I get calls last minute to be in certain places and do suicide watches and make sure that, you know, people are safe, or I transport them and I intervene and get them from under a bridge into a facility. So that line of work has left me living a very unpredictable life. So I was going to see the movie Sweet Kill, but regardless, it's The Sweet Kill across all platforms. Love it if you guys could follow along the streaming services like Spotify, iTunes, and definitely subscribe to our YouTube and check out the Panther video and all that stuff. That subscriptions really help boost algorithms, as they say. So,
yep.
And yeah, Instagram, Facebook, all that stuff. The Sweet Kill.
Nice, man. Thank you so much. And you know, that's, you just mentioned something else that we share in common too. You know, I lost someone very close to me to suicide, and I used to do like concert promotions here in the Cleveland area to raise awareness, and we would do suicide prevention benefit concerts. And at, you know, one point it was like I was working with Derek Hess, who's a local Cleveland artist who's got work in the Louvre and stuff out there. And you know, it's just definitely something I'm passionate about too, is just you know, working with people struggling, let them know they're, you know, hey, I still struggle myself, you know, all these years later. But it's like, you know, there's hope out there. And it's usually having somebody else come next to me, like you said, in that foxhole, having that person next to you in the foxhole to help talk you out of it.
You know? Yes.
So thank you so much for your time, Pete. If I could get you do one last favor before I let you go, would you mind cutting a promo ID for the show? Just introduce yourself, and you're listening to Today's Boondoggle.
Yep, 100%. Do you want me to do that now?
Yeah.
All right. This is Pete Mills from The Sweet Kill, and today you're listening to Today's Boondoggle podcast.
Awesome. Pete, thank you so much for your time. It was great talking to you, and I'm glad I got your information. I'm going to try and keep in touch and send you some other things that I think we share in common.
Absolutely. Please do, man.
All right. Thanks so much for your time, man.
You got it. Have a good one, Bill.
I want to kiss the glow. Sucked in the undertow.
brought to you by Today's Boondoggle.
I saw that down at the mill.
They chase all kinds.
You get a
rear ticket. Oh my god!
Down
yeah.
At the mill.
What was you putting that oxygen in with it?
And acetylene.
They get the equal
amount of oxygen
and
acetylene.
And
the most violent explosion
and all
you
that
will ever hear.
That's cool.
Oh, it's raining. Everybody else is gone.
Don't be around when it goes off.
Yeah, don't be near it. And don't look at the light.
Make sure you're far away
or some shit.
Like a maybe. Oh my god!
That booing. The machinist uses it for bluing, for laying
like
out,
the
for layout.
Yes. In the cage, and boom.
It seals them.
Taking off. Good to meet you.
You too. All right.
I'll
grab my jacket. I'll be right back.
Good to see you
later. All right, man. Take care, guy.
You too. Be careful.
Going home. Yeah. Drive
fast. So okay. Hey, hold on a second. You're the one that's not married? Okay, we got
take
it.
Come all that way.
I'm still imagining a big boob chief. I'm going to go home and take that with me.
Yeah.
Boobs.
Judy Booty, the dick does.
Pardon?
Was that Tim? Is he leaving?
He's coming back.
No, okay. Yeah.
I have his card. Right.
Okay.
Well, in that case, put another round on his card.
We'll teach you.
We'll teach him to leave anything with us.
Iron up the bar.
Sorry, Tim.
I can't believe. No, man. Live and learn, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What was he thinking?
He leave his camera?
He leave his phone, too?
Yeah. Hey, here's another Tim Daly story.
We'll learn that young man.
Should I add, like, 20 drinks on there and just hand it to him? You guys
could
watch
us.
Give
him like $1,000 or
can
something.
Give, can you make a bill of like $180?
That's what he's saying.
Make up a bill.
Beef it up big.
I'll print it out
off
now and I'll take it off. We'll see what happens.
That'll be nice. Take it off. Hey, here's a.
And thank you for listening to another story time from the VFW Hall, brought to you by Today's Boondoggle. Thank you for listening once again to today's Boondoggle Radio Show. Please be sure to check out our website, domaincle.com or todaysboondoggle.com for more shows and check out our archives. Follow us on social media at Today's Boondoggle on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter for more information about this podcast. And please support us on www.anchor.fm/todaysboondoggle, as well as on our GoFundMe and Venmo. Be sure to subscribe, comment, download, and listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spreaker, and all the other podcast platforms out there. Please email us with any questions, suggestions, and comments via todaysboondoggle@gmail.com. Leave us some 5-star reviews and help spread the word. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you for tuning into this week's Today's Boondoggle. Domain Cleveland Entertainment is a veteran-owned and operated cornucopia of nonsensical shenanigans. You can find interesting interviews, music news and information, and just about everything else in between. Thank you again for supporting, sharing, and tuning into today's Boondoggle.